98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
The ace of a pitching staff is responsible for some heavy lifting. He must win the hardest games, the playoff games, the games that end losing streaks and stretches of bad baseball. But we have a smaller ask of Madison Bumgarner today because he is no longer an ace. But he doesn't need to stop the bleeding in his third start of the season. He just needs to keep this positive momentum moving in the right direction. And that's because the Diamondbacks offered something of a protest over the weekend. They won a series. Tim LeCastro's cleats ended up in the Hall of Fame. Luke Weaver nearly pitched a no-hitter. It might have even been a three-game sweep if not for Torey Lovello's very interesting decision to pinch hit Bumgarner in the ninth inning of a tie game when he had two position players available. The decision wasn't necessarily bad. It was just weird, as if Lovello wanted to fabricate some kind of cool moment to change the Mad Bum narrative in Arizona. Either way, it's clearly proof that Lovello isn't exactly gripping from his lame duck status either. But this team doesn't need home runs from Madison Bumgarner. It needs the occasional home win starting tonight. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my friends at Chapman BMW. You can test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler at Chapman BMW on Camelback. You can find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
It was an interesting decision the other night to call on number 40 to be the pinch hitter in a tie game situation. Did not work out. Diamondbacks lost that game. They've won two straight since then. There was a lot of questions about it. Torey Lovello had a pretty, pretty solid rationale for making the decision that he did, even with two position players left on the bench. Madison Bumgarner, we know, can hit. I like the way you put it, though. We don't need home runs from Madison Bumgarner. We need something positive when he's, when he's on the mound. And the next opportunity for him to do that is tonight in start number three of the year. And it's getting interesting now, too, because you're starting to see the Diamondbacks creep towards health again. Cole Calhoun came back. Nick Ahmed came back. Zach Gallen, at least yesterday, they were saying he could be back as early as tomorrow for game two against the A's. We shall see. But with this team becoming more whole, I think a lot of pressure gets alleviated, lifted off the shoulders of Madison Bumgarner. Especially with Gallen coming back, and I think we would all agree Gallen's their best pitcher. But that doesn't lessen the necessity that Madison Bumgarner's still got to improve. He's still got to perform better than he has.
And generally in the ace methodology of Major League Baseball, the theory goes like this. The starting pitcher, the ace of your staff, will go out when things are going normal, and he'll pitch a really good game, and he'll create a vibe that other starting pitchers try to match in each successive outing. That's always, there was the famous in-clubhouse competition between Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling, who were fabulous at that. And so looking at it that way, you can look at Luke Weaver's performance yesterday and say that was an ace-type outing. Now, Luke Weaver is not an ace, obviously, but he was sensational yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so now he's set something of a standard. Now let's see if Madison Bumgarner can follow that up. I will be slightly encouraged if the Diamondbacks come out tonight and play that kind of game, if they put another game together like they did yesterday. And keep in mind, I've been very skeptical and pessimistic of the ceiling of this baseball team. To the contrary, given the fact that they did just come off of a winning a series, and given the fact that they played probably their best overall game to date yesterday, I'd be very disappointed if he got lit up.
I don't think there's any question about that. And you normally look at, quote-unquote, and I use this term loosely in this instance, ace of the staff, because Madison Bumgarner is that in name only at this point for the Diamondbacks. But you normally look at that guy as, all right, team's not playing well, lost three or four in a row, our number one guy's on the mound. This is an opportunity for him to stop the bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
The Diamondbacks aren't bleeding right now. It's become almost to the point where his job is to prevent bleeding from starting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Prevent a cut.
Now, and also, the last couple games, I was surprised that there, and maybe this is a sign of apathy more than anything, that there wasn't a bigger outcry from fans about the decision to pinch hit Madison Bumgarner in the ninth inning of Friday's loss. Game was tied. Torey Lovello had two position players available to him, Geraldo Perdomo and left-handed hitting catcher Stephen Vogt. And so you got a left-hander in Vogt and a left-hander in Madison Bumgarner. I'm sorry, a right-hander in Madison Bumgarner. You've got a prospect who wouldn't even be in Major League Baseball right now if not for injuries at the position.
And he's not now.
He's not now.
He got optioned already.
Okay, so those were your options. And so the idea of choosing Mad Bum in that situation was interesting. Now, he took the first two pitches, and it was a 2-0 count. He swung from his heels, broke his bat, and popped up. Okay. The batter before had reached base on a 4-pitch walk and then followed with two successive balls to Mad Bum. The thinking there is, if you'd have put a position player up there, maybe you would have catch a pitcher suddenly wild, and now maybe you got guys on first and second with the top of the order coming up. It was a very interesting decision. And it was fascinating to me for a couple of things, because it felt like, all right, we've got to get Mad Bum going here, and maybe this is the way to do it. Let's send him up there to hit, because he's had some great BP sessions recently. But the thing that I can't get past is, you know, Torey Lovello going overboard of what a good hitter Madison Bumgarner is. He's a good hitter for a pitcher. He's not what you would call a good hitter.
I agree with you. I mean, and the numbers bear that out career-wise. He's a 177 hitter. And I think Torey Lovello would disagree with you saying that, or us saying that. Before that at-bat, he was 4-for-11 as a pinch hitter in his career. So not horrible numbers. And I get the lefty-righty matchup thing there. I think bigger, and you hit on this in your blast and have written about it too. The fact that Torey Lovello felt the freedom and wiggle room to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty interesting moving forward.
Yeah,
he's not managing like a guy who feels like he's under pressure.
No, and he said he wouldn't. But if you were a lame duck manager, that's about the last thing you would do. Send up a pitcher to pitch hit in a high leverage situation, even if he's Madison Bumgarner. That's a hard thing to wear if it doesn't work. Yeah, so that was one of the interesting highlights of the weekend. But coming out of that game, the Diamondbacks responded, and that's I guess that's encouraging.
Yeah, it is encouraging, and there hasn't been much encouraging so far this year, despite the fact that they won the finale against San Diego, they won the first game in Colorado, but followed it up with two straight losses. The Reds have been decent. I don't know if the Reds are necessarily, they're a good offensive team. I know that. I don't know if they're going to be standing at the end in the National League Central, but Torey Lovello talked about what was a promising, and not only yesterday, promising offensive performance all weekend against the Reds.
Offensively, David had the big blow, broke the game open, the 3-run home run. Those innings are built. You know, we did a good job of getting base runners on base, and then David, who has a knack for getting the job done at the most crucial moments of the game, comes up and basically breaks him open. I felt Eduardo's 2-run home run took it to the next level, but it was a pretty solid effort for us offensively. Van Meter gets on base 5 times. We had a lot of traffic on the bases throughout the entire game, but we picked up the baseball, we pitched the baseball, and we hit the baseball. It was a pretty good Sunday afternoon for us.
And that was one of the big plus signs too offensively. Eduardo Escobar, 6-for-14 in the series against the Reds, 3 home runs. He's homered in 4 straight games. 5 of his 6 hits were of the extra base variety. So I know there's a lot of people maybe a bit worried about Eduardo Escobar coming off a bad year, and then he recommitted himself. He got in better shape, and for him to start out slow once again was a little bit discouraging, but he looks really dialed in right now.
That's really encouraging to see.
Yeah, you mentioned LeCastro. Peralta starting to hit the ball a little bit. You know, there's some guys that still need to get it going, but Josh Van Meter gets on base 5 times in one game. Offensively, that's exactly the weekend the Diamondbacks needed.
I agree.
When you get shut out in Colorado.
And then nearly no hit the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even Friday night, Cincinnati starter went into the fifth inning without giving up a hit.
Uh-huh.
It was a nice bounce back.
I agree. Totally. And now you think about this. In a parallel universe, had one person made a decision a little differently, the Oakland A's lineup might have featured Kyler Murray tonight. Two on that.
True. Kyler Murray's good at all sports, apparently.
Clearly.
We'll get into that a little bit later on. You don't have to be a star athlete to get your signing bonus. Just text the word bonus right now to 620-620. Listen for your name this afternoon at 1:35 to win $500. That's bonus to 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports Signing Bonus. Arizona Cardinals still putting their team together. We are 17 days away from the first round of the NFL draft. That'll be April 29th, and as it gets closer, we'll continue to gear up on the show, on the station, on ArizonaSports.com, getting you ready for all the possibilities for the Arizona Cardinals. But before we get to the draft, they might add a free agent veteran running back. Maybe the best free agent running back still on the board. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of names out there. Le'Veon Bell still out there. But James Conner, the former Pittsburgh Steeler, coming in for a visit with the Arizona Cardinals today. Conner's had, I think, an up-and-down career. There's been moments. His first year as a starter in Pittsburgh, I think, was the highlight of his career. But what has dotted his resume to this point as a pro player and even going back to college has been injuries. How much of a concern should that be for the Arizona Cardinals? We had Mark Caballi on, who covers the Steelers for The Athletic today, and he didn't really sugarcoat it, Ben. He kind of outlined just how injury-prone James Conner has been.
Well, if you're expecting a guy to be a workhorse running back and a guy that's going to be able to give you 25, 30 carries a game, you're not thinking of the right guy. The problem when he had in Pittsburgh over the 4 years he was here was he's injury prone. I mean, this is even dating back to his final years in college when he had knee injuries. Every single year he had some sort of injury that kept him off the field for an extended period of time. I mean, it was just getting to the point where they could not count on him for an extended period of time, and that's been his biggest downfall, and who knows what it is. I mean, it's been a multitude of different injuries. You can't just point at one thing. I mean, it's knees, it's quads, it's shoulders, it's just about everything. So that's been the biggest downfall with him.
Yeah, obviously concerning when you hear it put that way. There's an injury to talk about right now, too.
In the offseason, he got injured.
Ian Rappaport tweeted out earlier today, ex-Steelers running back James Conner underwent surgery to repair a very moderate turf toe-type injury this offseason, sources say. A procedure done by renowned specialist Dr. Robert Anderson. The injury occurred while riding in a recreational vehicle. Full recovery is expected in June. Riding in a recreational vehicle? Isn't that an RV?
I think he means like an ATV, off-road vehicle.
Yeah,
so,
right.
He tripped over RV's the toilet in a...
I think they mean an all-terrain vehicle.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably what they meant to write.
All right. So maybe another knock was lack of production. I looked at what the Steelers did as an offense, rushing the football, and what James Conner did individually. 4.3 yards per carry. As opposed to 3.6, the team average per carry. Mark Caballi said, yeah, don't get sucked into that either.
You know, that number, that 4.3, might be blown out of proportion because he had a couple long runs late in games. I'm talking about 60, 70-yard runs where the game was in hand. Mm-hmm. And then if you know anything about football, of course you do. Those are what makes those averages go from mediocre to very good. So, like I said, he wasn't anything more than average. And now on the upside of that, he didn't really have any offensive line to run behind, and that's been a key.
Again, it's kind of a negative review from a guy who watched him play there in Pittsburgh for 4 years.
Yeah, I got that too,
which is very rare though for all the local guys we have on to talk about.
Oh, almost, you're going to love that guy. Oh, you'll love that guy. We'll find a better guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of struck me as interesting because a lot of the national guys from Jay Glazer on are tabbing Connor as the best free agent running back available.
Which at this point doesn't mean much.
It doesn't mean much. And to listen to our guy from Pittsburgh, he's like, yeah, if you want a guy to sign $1 million, he's the kind of guy just going to be grateful to take what you give him. And I'm like, whoa. Okay.
Well, that's exactly where I was going, though. You're not counting at this stage in the game and with his resume and what you have on the roster, and they're excited about Chase Edmonds, and he's shown reason to be excited about him. You're not counting on James Connor to come in here and be your lead back.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, as the lead back, Kenyon Drake got 239 carries and also 25 catches. I don't think you're asking James Connor to come in here and touch the football 260 times. So it probably is a deal like Mark Cabali talked about. 1 year, $1 million. Be part of the mix. See if you can rekindle your career. I still think with the injuries and with that kind of negative connotation about the production from James Conner, those numbers make it still low risk, in my opinion. And you need somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know the local reaction is, they got Eno Benjamin. We all love Eno Benjamin. He's one of my favorite Sun Devils of the last decade, if not the last 20 years. I love the way he played the game in college. He did not do enough to get in a uniform on Sunday last year,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason. I don't know what the reasons are. So if you're a big Sun Devil fan and you're counting on Eno Benjamin, I'm just here to tell you, you're probably doing it wrong.
Well,
they need a veteran there.
Yeah. And so again, I think that this is probably what's going to be presented to James Conner. It's we'll help you relaunch your career. We'll keep the carries to a minimum. Because I think from what I saw last year of him, even though the Steelers' offensive line was terrible, what it all comes down to with aging running backs like this is the disposition of the ball carrier. What kind of heat do they run with, and are they still willing to go between the tackles? Because that's where it really hurts. That's where it really hurts to play that position. Only the toughest guys do that, and even the guys who did do it sometimes stopped doing it. Especially with bad offensive lines.
Mm-hmm.
And that might have been the story of Kenyon Drake's sudden change in directional running last year. So I'm still down with it. I'm a little bit concerned that a report from a guy who covers the Steelers is a little less than glowing. That's mm-hmm. all. But it was more of like a reality check, I think. So that's fine.
For the veteran, if you want to go down that veteran road, though, at running back, here's the names that are out there. James Conner. Le'Veon Bell. Do you have any interest in Le'Veon Bell at this point?
No.
Todd Gurley?
No.
Duke Johnson?
Maybe.
Giovanni Bernard?
Yeah, maybe.
Rex Burkhead?
No.
Jerick McKinnon? I mean...
Yeah, there's not a lot out there. You're right.
It's slim pickings at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this, if you go out and get somebody like a James Conner, it lessens the necessity to draft a running back higher. You see what I'm saying? If you look at the list of running backs that's available and the guys that are projected to go maybe fourth, fifth round,
mm-hmm.
Third day guys, if you want truly that stable, which again, I've pointed this out before, I think Cliff Kingsbury has really struggled to give carries to more than one running back, let alone three, like some teams do successfully in the NFL. If that's the road you want to go down, you have an option, a lower priced option in terms of draft capital.
Yeah. That to me seems to be evidence that you should go in and take a chance at a low cost veteran, because the best thing to be able to do is to take a top 10 player on your board at number 16 is, was it Mel Kiper who said that? And I think that's really sound advice, because then you can stash a good player. Don't burden him with expectations of contributing right away. And that's how you build real depth in the NFL. And if you go and decide you want Najee Harris and that he's the guy, well, you've got to attempt to trade down, which might not be a bad idea, but you got to make sure you do it at the right place. And I don't know. I really like the idea of bringing in a Giovanni Bernard, a James Conner, and just keeping the carries and the expectations down a little bit, manageable, and balance it with Chase Edmonds, and because that's the model, as we all know, that's the model of successful teams in the NFL. Running back by committee, mm-hmm. got to have it.
Well, last year the differential was Kenyon Drake, 239 carries, Chase Edmonds, 97. But the X factor in all of it is you had a quarterback in Kyler Murray that ran the ball 133 times.
That's true.
That in itself and his ability to do that will lighten the load for anybody who's in that running back stable.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a guy with 300 carries with Kyler Murray at quarterback.
Right.
You don't need to.
Yeah, it's true. But how many of Kyler Murray's carries were scrambles? How many were designed runs?
I'd have to.
We'd have to break down those numbers further. But yeah, they need to establish a multidimensional running game aside from Kyler Murray.
Yes, I agree. Coming up next, NFL draft again, 17 days away from round one. That continues to be our focus here on Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Bickley and Murata on this Monday, coming to you live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. We're getting closer and closer to the 2021 NFL draft. Cardinals sitting in the first round right now at number 16, here to talk draft with us. A longtime NFL draft scout and analyst from DraftWire, part of USA Today Sports, Luke Easterling, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Luke, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. How are you?
Good. I think when we talked to you last year, you dropped the bomb about your experience with the Tiger King. Am I remembering this correctly, Luke?
Is this where I did that? I remember
yes.
a couple of times I got to tell that fun story. But that's...
Your fame precedes you.
Yeah, there you go.
I have no connection to the Tiger King.
Of all the things I've accomplished, that's what goes goes before me. Good.
Right, isn't that? It's ridiculous.
We don't get to pick. Yeah. We don't get to pick.
Nope.
Right now, with the Cardinals at 16, when you consider their needs, how they've attacked the offseason, and the gaps that they still have with the way the board could shake out, how possible do you think it is, Luke, right now for the Cardinals to trade down?
I think it could happen. Obviously, you know, when you're in the middle, it's kind of tough to peg one way or the other. I don't know if there's anybody at the positions they need that they could fall in love with enough to move up. So obviously, if you're looking to move down, you're looking to add picks, and you're comfortable with what you could get at corner, you're comfortable with what you could get on the offensive line, maybe another a young pass rusher on the edge there to kind of rotate in and eventually take over because you got some veteran guys there. Definitely a lot of different ways you could go there. If they're comfortable with what's on the board at all of those positions or maybe a few and they think, hey, we've got a deal we like on the table, we can move back, get some additional picks, get better value, save a little money, and still get an impact player at any of those positions down a little further, I definitely think it could happen. But I think they're in a great spot there at 16 to be able to pick between some quality prospects at those positions or if they do have that kind of deal on the table to feel comfortable moving back. They'll have a lot of options.
Now, for those who don't know, and I didn't know this, but Luke, you once a few years ago tweeted out that you advised teams to take Lamar Jackson at number one overall. Now, at that time, I'm sure you had a lot of people rolling their eyes, but in retrospect, you certainly weren't far from the truth. So that in mind, how do you handicap this year's quarterback class?
It's a fun one. Again, when you look at the fact that we're fully expecting three quarterbacks to come off the board in the first three picks, and it's not preposterous that four could come off the board in the first four picks, which is something we've never had happen in draft history. But the interesting part to me is that you really have four quarterback prospects that honestly are worth it in terms of their projections, in terms of their ability. Obviously, you never know how those guys are going to turn out. It has a lot to do with where they go and what the rest of the team looks like from there on. But in terms of their individual talent in a vacuum, I think that any combination of obviously Trevor Lawrence at number one, and then once you get into Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Zach Wilson after that, and I think Mac Jones is in the next tier beyond those four guys. I don't put him in that conversation personally. But all three of the rest of those guys, slot them any order you want in the top four, and I think they could easily end up being worth it. So it really comes down to what you prefer for your scheme. Once you sit down with these guys and each team kind of gets to know them and gets to pick their brain and see how they would fit. Obviously, right now, it definitely feels like Zach Wilson to the Jets at number two. Personally, I think Justin Fields is the second-best quarterback in this draft and would be the easy number one pick in just about any other draft class that doesn't have a guy like Trevor Lawrence in it. But when you look at Zach Wilson and kind of the flashy plays he makes at certain times, I don't see the same consistency that I see from Justin Fields, but I understand the flashes and how that could kind of make you bank on the upside with a guy like that because that reminds us of what happened with Patrick Mahomes. Honestly, you know, he wasn't the most mechanically sound passer. He wasn't necessarily the most consistent with his accuracy, but he was a really smart guy who made magic happen when the play breaks down. And when you see what he's been able to do, I understand why teams could fall in love with a guy like Zach Wilson. Trey Lance is the ultimate wild card, I think, because you have a guy that only really started one season, and he started it at the FCS level. You know, really wanted to see him go up against teams like Oregon on the road, which, you know, was going to happen. And obviously COVID-19 took that game off the schedule. He only played one game this past year against Central Arkansas. Didn't really play great for three quarters, brought him back for the win in the fourth quarter, which you obviously like to see. But he's obviously more of a long-term projection. He's got great arm talent, great athlete, can obviously run the ball really well. But he's kind of the wild card in terms of projection. That's why I think he makes sense for a team like Atlanta at four, right? You got to be paying for Matt Ryan for a while. He could make sense there. But I really like those four guys. I think Mac Jones, like I said, is in a different tier below that. But, man, it's a fun quarterback class because you got a lot of different skill sets. It's going to be fun to watch.
Luke Easterling from USA Today's Draft Wire, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. Going back to your mock that you published last week, you had Lance going number three to San Francisco. Kind of the same thinking, maybe not as tied in as the Falcons are with Matt Ryan, but Lance could make sense for the 49ers at three, but with that security blanket in Jimmy Garoppolo, right?
Absolutely. I think it's a very similar situation, and I would put maybe Detroit at seven in a similar situation, right? You like, you know, you want to see what you have in Jared Goff, but you'd like to have a long-term plan after that if you have the ability to land a guy like that if he's still on the board. So I think with what we heard today, I heard Tom Pelissero on NFL Network talking about the fact that Justin Fields and Trey Lance are both having those second pro days. Yeah. And that they're actually going to have Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers involved in the planning of that, basically. They're going to have some schemes and some drills and some throws set up that basically are tailored to that offense and to what Kyle Shanahan likes. So they're obviously, you know, they're trying to make their own strong case here to be that number three pick. And I think that's why it feels like Zach Wilson to the Jets pretty much is a sure thing at this point, because I think those guys are really jockeying to kind of push back on the narrative that Mac Jones was their target when they traded up to number three. I think either of those guys would be a better pick. And it's interesting to see them kind of making it clear that they're auditioning for that team.
Yeah, really interesting stuff, because I wasn't quite certain why I kept reading reports about Justin Fields slipping. And granted, the consistency wasn't always there, but on the contrary, that's giving Zach Wilson a hall pass for playing lesser competition. What do you think, what forces are at work here?
I mean, I've said it before, and I feel like this isn't news, but I've been doing this a long, long time, and the fact of the matter is that this seems to only happen when you have a black quarterback. And I feel like, again, this should be obvious to anyone who's paying attention, that when you have teams trading up for a guy like Mitch Trubisky at number two and a guy like Deshaun Watson drops to number 12 after the career he had at Clemson, and you look at what's happening now with a guy like Mac Jones being talked about at number three, and then you talk about Justin Fields maybe being the fifth quarterback off the board after the career he just had at Ohio State, it feels like there's no other explanation for me than the fact that there must be some sort of, whether it's unconscious or not, some sort of bias in the way these quarterbacks are evaluated, whether it's in the league or the media, which, again, are two very different things in the way that those two entities evaluate things, right? So
yeah.
I don't know that it's something that people would be able to put a finger on and say, I'm purposefully doing that. But what you can't argue with is the results. And you go back to what you said earlier about my thoughts on Lamar Jackson, a very similar situation. That guy couldn't get a bite in the first round until somebody traded up to the very last pick. And he's finally, you know, we've seen athletes and players like that forced to other positions. And the narratives leading up to that draft were doing the same thing. We heard people talking about Lamar Jackson having to switch positions. Why weren't we talking about Josh Allen switching to tight end?
Yeah.
You know, he was a big athletic quarterback who had accuracy issues and had trouble with consistency and statistics, but we never heard that conversation. So, you know, you start to put two and two together, it becomes obvious to me. I think it's obvious to a lot of people. It just seems to be a conversation that people don't really want to have.
Luke Easterling from DraftWire, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Corner is an area of need still for the Cardinals. Obviously a very possible pick of a corner at number 16. Let me address it this way. If Surtain, Horn, and Farley are all still there at 16 for the Cardinals and they want to go corner, where should they go?
I mean, it's Surtain for me, but those guys are pretty tightly graded to me. I think the big question obviously would be Caleb Farley's back injury. He's had surgery on that in the offseason.
Sounds like things went really well earlier this week in Indianapolis when all those guys went to get their medical checks. So hopefully that's the case, because I think he's a top 10, top 15 player easily at full strength. You just want to make sure that he's going to be able to live up to that and to stay healthy with that back injury. Back injuries are weird like that. You never kind of know how they're going to go, and they impact everything. So all three of those guys have everything you look for in today's starting corner, right? They got the height, they got the length, the athleticism, the ball skills. They're smart guys, great instincts. So you really can't go wrong. I do not expect all three of them to be on the board. And honestly, yeah, Farley feels like the most likely to be there because of the injury and because of the question marks there. But it wouldn't surprise me to see him be the only one there and that be the only reason.
One last one for you, Luke, and we appreciate your time. I'm fascinated, too. There's a number of positions where there's not really any consensus in the pecking order of the quality of the prospects, and I think wide receiver is one of those. And a lot of people are saying Ja'Marr Chase is easily the best guy, but when you have a Heisman Trophy winner like Devontae Smith and then Jaylen Waddle, where's your preference there? How would you rank those three prospects going into this?
I do think Ja'Marr Chase is head and shoulders above that group. I think he's the clear-cut number one, even after opting out. I think he proved at his pro day what kind of athlete we knew he was already. And again, you see what he was able to do with Joe Burrow. I'd love to see a reuniting there in Cincinnati at number five. I think would make a lot of sense. But he's just a more complete player. He's a big, thick receiver with great athleticism, great hands. He's really got the total package. And I think when you look at those other two guys, Devontae Smith has a couple of things that he does extremely well. He's a very smooth route runner. He's got a lot of the same things that I think made Justin Jefferson so successful mm-hmm. in Minnesota this year, and I think teams will really be excited about that. You just wonder, at 170-ish pounds, you know, is he going to be able to hold up at that level if he's going to get knocked around a little bit? And Jaylen Waddle, he missed probably half the season with that ankle injury, but, man, when he's got the ball in his hands, if you're looking for – I don't like to compare prospects every year to the best players in the league, but when you look at what Tyreek Hill has been able to do, regardless of his size, I mean, we talk about number one wide receivers, and we think they all have to be big. He's a number one wide receiver, and you don't have to have that. I think Jaylen Waddle's got that kind of explosiveness. Just go watch his highlights and see how quickly he eliminates angles. He's just so explosive. I think those two guys, it just depends on what you need for your offense in terms of Smith and Waddle, which one you would have ranked ahead of the other.
Luke, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate the time and the insight today.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Have a great one.
Thank you, Ben. Luke Easterling from DraftWire USA Today. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, Coulter Nissan. West of the hassle, visit coulternissan.com. Coming up next, Suns racking up wins, and they've relied on chemistry. We'll get more into that subject next. Bickley Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata.
And the Suns on the doorstep of their 37th victory of the campaign. And they did it in dramatic fashion with a huge third quarter here tonight. We wait for the final horn. There it is. This one is history. And the Suns have come up with the victory to start this homestand. Here's the final score. The Suns 134. The Washington Wizards 106.
Al McCoy on the final call. That was for Saturday night. Suns, as you heard Al say, 37 wins, 15 losses. Are you getting to the point like I am? I know it's been a long wait, and I should be savoring every moment of this journey to the postseason return.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to get here. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't know. I think that there is still... I would feel that way if I felt this team was ready for it right now. I feel they need to go through this to be able to...
You're probably right. You're probably more wise in feeling the way that you do as opposed to the way that I do.
Again, I think it's going to be... there's going to be a lot of intrigue. I'm not quite certain we have any clue as to what is going to happen around the Suns and the seedings. For instance, look at what the Boston Celtics did to the Nuggets yesterday. Nuggets scored 8 points in the fourth quarter of that game.
Eight.
Celtics crushed them.
Yeah. At home, by the way.
Right.
The Nuggets were in Denver. Yeah.
So this was the signature win of the season for the Celtics. So, and to me, this is going to get very, very interesting to see if the Suns can hold on to the turf they have and if in the long run that's going to turn out to be a good thing. Right now, a 2-7 would be a matchup against the Mavericks. Now, A lot of people would like kind of maybe get a little weirded out by, oh, great, we get to lose to Luka. I think the Suns can handle the Mavericks.
I think so, too, but it's also not like years past where you can just look at that who's the seven right now. It could be any one of those teams, 7, 8, 9, 10, if the Suns are indeed locked into that two spot. I would feel good about any of those teams, 7 to 10 right now, in a series against mm-hmm. the Suns right now. The Luka thing would scare you a little bit because, you know, he does have a little bit of postseason experience. He has been carrying that team now for 2 years. But I guess my worry is more about moving on. Once you get into that top four,
mm-hmm.
it is rough. Well, the Western Conference is just loaded.
Yeah, no, listen, and I think that...
Think of it this way, Bick. Of the Jazz, Suns, Clippers, Lakers, Nuggets, one of those teams is not going to be, at least one of those teams is not going to be in the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah. See, now that's frightening. There's a lot of risk involved in that. And that's why the remaining stretch of games on the Suns schedule is so interesting to me. They've mm-hmm. got some weak spots. You can see some problem areas, and yet they're starting to work some of this stuff out. For instance, okay, Devin Booker now, when Chris Paul is not in the game, teams are rushing double teams at Devin Booker every time he crosses half court. They got to find a way to make plays playing 4-on-3. If teams are going to just go and take Devin Booker out of an offensive sequence, you got to make teams pay big for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's an opportunity for growth there. DeAndre Ayton, one of the things that I really like that what he's doing is he's playing forceful, but he's not getting into foul trouble, and he's going to have to find that balance of challenging, defending the rim, but not doing it to the point where you're getting yourself in stupid foul trouble. And it was one of those areas like, really, we're going to trust him to pull that off? So far, he has. He's mm-hmm. been really terrific at it. You can watch the way that he's reading the play in front of him. He doesn't. It looks more instinctual now. So there's areas of growth with this team that I think we're all really, really excited about. And then on top of everything, Devin Booker just set the highest score ever on Kendall Jenner's Papa Shot machine.
Wait a minute. Wait, that sounds bad.
Not a euphemism for anything.
Okay, it is actually. We're actually talking about mini basketball.
We are.
Okay,
there was something, I didn't know where it was on social media, but Devin Booker was playing Papa Shot against Kendall Jenner in the Jenner compound. That's what they called that. So I'm sure it's in, you know, Southern California somewhere.
Probably on an island somewhere.
Probably on an island somewhere. And, you know, he set a new high score on Papa Shot, and he was pumped. Is there nothing that man can't do?
I think not.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if he's making trips back and forth to L.A. in between games and stuff, but, hey, you know.
Whatever.
At least he's not getting on a jet ski and going across, you know, a big body of water in Scotland.
Wait, who did that?
Vince, you don't remember that story? He wasn't here that day.
Oh, okay. There was a guy they called Jet Ski Romeo. You don't remember Jet Ski Romeo?
This is for Valentine's Day.
For Valentine's Day, he lived in Lower Scotland and wanted to go to Isle of Man.
So he
got on a jet ski.
Yeah.
And he figured, this is no problem, man. I'll get there in no time. Took him 5 hours to get there. Right? And he was just
Didn't he get arrested?
He got arrested.
Yeah.
And he just about ran out of gas. But they called him Jet Ski Romeo, which is one of the best band names we've come up
yes,
with.
Yes, that is a fantastic one. Obviously, chemistry is very, very strong on this Suns team, and it gets stronger with the win. Chris Paul talked to the media today about the chemistry, and he had a hard time putting it into words.
It's hard to describe, man. It's one of those situations where when you do have a day off and you come into practice that next day, you're like, hey, man, I miss y'all, man, you know, because it's just such a great group of guys, and I think credit goes to the guys that's been here and the coaching staff. You know, you talk about culture, and you get on the court, you know what you're going to get from my guys, but, you know, it's nice being on a good team, but it's even better when you enjoy being around the guys that's on the team.
And on that subject of chemistry, too, CP3 was asked about, you know, what can you do now off the court to help build chemistry, which is obviously a big part of chemistry building in normal years?
All types of stuff. Whether it's our team group chat, whether it's in the locker room, post-game, pre-game, on the plane, all these different times. We spent a lot of time together this year. Spent a lot of time together. And you know, like I say, is a really good group to be around.
And then Chris Paul also talked about how grateful he is to have the kind of influence he's had on a team in his first year.
I think it's a blessing, seriously. Did an interview yesterday. I was sort of asked about that, and it's something I'll take for granted. I think for me, I just do the work. You know what I mean? Like, I fell in love years ago with the process of doing the work. And, you know, you can't cheat this game. You can't cheat this game. Everybody doesn't get an opportunity to play long careers. And I'm grateful for it. But for me, it's just about doing the work. Doing the work. I get a chance to play, and guys that I came in the league with now, some of them coaching, some of them, a lot of them not playing. So, yeah, I'm grateful.
Yeah, I said this last week. You know, we all expected when Chris Paul came to Phoenix, like, best case scenario, It would go the way that it's gone. This is one of those rare best case scenario is the reality for this team.
Yeah.
It couldn't have gone much better than it's gone so far.
Yeah, I agree.
He's been phenomenal.
Yeah, from overall team health to the way he's affected other individual players, it's been exactly what the team needed.
Yep. Suns and Rockets tonight. You can hear it here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Coming up, a couple of the things under the microscope. Instant replay in sports, Cardinals running back position, and more we'll explore in social study straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.